All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you once again to the U.S. CDI Task Force, our March 9th meeting. I think it's number 6, maybe even number 7. I've lost count, but we're moving ahead. I'm going to open up the meeting today and call roll, starting with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
I am here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
And we heard from Leslie that she was not going to be able to join us this morning for family issue.
Okay. Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Butendijk.
Present. Morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Here.
Tim Turgis.
Present.
Ann Kawamoto. Les Leonard.
I'm here.
Clem McDonald. Aaron Neary. Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andrew Truscott.
Good morning.
Cheryl Turney. Dan Breeman, I know, has a conflict today, so he won't be joining us. Denise Webb.
I'm present.
All right. Thank you, everybody. And I'd like to turn it over to Stephen. Take us away.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, who has made the time to join us. I'm sure we'll be joined by a few other folks over time. This is our last meeting before our first presentation to the HITAC committee tomorrow morning. So we are excited to go over the materials that have been prepared for that meeting and then try to get through as best as possible the comments that we've collected regarding actually tasks 1A and B. I think there's a little typo here. If we get to task 1C, that'll be great, but I think my goal for tomorrow is to have our 1A and B as tidied up as possible. With regard to past meeting notes, those are being completed and posted to our website, to the HITAC website, that is. You can access them by going to the HITAC calendar and clicking on the meetings on the individual days. I guess, Mike, I'll ask you to provide an update on how we're doing on the task force's own website and when we anticipate that'll be live. I know that's run into some snags along the way.
Actually, just got an update yesterday. I know they're diligently working on it, and I think Michelle Murray's on the call, and she is following up closely. If you can give us a quick update, Michelle.
I'm sorry, I only heard the last.
I was wondering if you could give a quick update on the web page.
Oh, I'm literally working on it right now. We ran into a glitch or two behind the scenes, but we're moving ahead to get something up very soon.
Wonderful. Well, we really appreciate that. I know it's been unusual times. Thank you, whoever just put us back on mute. It was a little noisy there for a bit. All right. And so we are going to go into our HITAC materials. Basically, Al helped us to prepare materials based on, you know, discussions we've had to date. But of course, the material we cover today can be added to this just verbally, and I'm looking forward to doing that. So I think in the slides we have sort of the high level of what we're planning on presenting tomorrow. And just to remind you all, this is a first pass of draft recommendations that we will then be bringing back to the HITAC in mid-April, more formally completing our recommendations related to tasks 1A, B, and C. So can we run through the slides here? So on slide 3, this was the high-level summary. And the reason that we're going through this sort of line by line is to make sure you all feel comfortable that we are representing our discussion and any finer detail that you think is important that we include in the presentation, please let us know and we'll do that. So we're first talking about task 1A, which of course was to evaluate version 1 data elements and vocabulary standards. And basically, you know, we did that. We supported the recommended standards. We supported the reclassification of the three clinical notes. But of course, there's more detail around that that we get to later. We really wanted to make sure that there was clarification of the scope of diagnostic imaging. There was a lot of discussion about, you know, what does this include or not include with specific examples. And then some great work has been done on the assessment and plan care class, plan of care data class. And we'll get to those details that Mark and others have prepared. But again, that will be part of our recommendation to HITACT, is to have ONC provide greater clarification and perhaps even doing some research into that. So any questions on this as sort of a high-level summary of where we've been with our task 1A?
Stephen, quick question.
Yeah, Mark.
Should the slide say assessment and plan of treatment? Not that it really matters, but just...
You're absolutely right. That is the actual name of the class. So, Al, can you capture these comments and we'll make that adjustment. Thank you, Mike.
And hopefully I think we can make that correction to the slides for HITACT if it's in there too. I'll double check.
Yeah, there is a timing thing where the HITACT stuff gets distributed and posted and blah blah blah. But we'll do the best we can. Anything else from our discussions of 1A that people wanted to make sure that we captured here and shared back with the HITACT? All right, and I'll try to watch the chat, but that's usually what Leslie's doing for me. Good morning, Andy. Good morning, Brad. Minor correction, here we go. It's a yes, thank you, Sasha. You're all over it. Okay, good. Let's go on to the next slide, which addresses how we've been approaching task 1B. That is to say, evaluating the new data classes and elements, and it probably should at the top say classes and elements, but that were included in draft version 2. And here we suggested merging the diagnostic imaging narrative element into the larger diagnostic imaging report. I know we've spent a bunch of time talking about that, clarifying that scope, which is sort of the same thing, making sure that the report itself includes the narrative, but is not exclusively the narrative, so we don't lose the discrete data that appropriately belongs there in many cases. Same concept with laboratory and pathology report narratives. Again, merging those together so that we're really looking at the entire report, including both discrete and narrative elements. We did have a broad discussion about laboratory what was included as a laboratory test. I don't think that they were quite calling this out here, but Al, you know, we'll want to be clear that, you know, that there was a discussion about, gee, could we include, you know, cardiology or pulmonary or sleep lab as laboratory results? And I think you clarified for us that the definition was really quite clear in terms of specimens collected from a patient and processed. I think we'll want to touch on that. We talked about care team. We talked about the challenge of the provider name and identifier data elements and wanting to change those to care team member name and identifier. And I think there's been some lively discussion about that I've pulled forward onto the spreadsheet that we'll touch on to make sure we're all on the same page. And then we had a pretty broad discussion about encounter time and what that means and how that can be used. And again, we've received some good feedback from folks on that. But these are what have been pulled out as the high-level items related to Task 1B, but I anticipate that after our discussion today, there may be a few more that we're going to want to add in here in terms of our draft recommendations back to HITACT. So any commentary on this other than what I've already touched on?
Stephen, I just have one minor comment about the care team member name and identifier. I just want to make sure that the identifier, if there isn't one, doesn't disqualify from a care team member being included and listed.
Yeah, we've definitely captured that.
Yeah, that was my comment on your comment, Grace, that it should be optional. It's not, it shouldn't be mandatory. But also we should make sure that we clarify the nature of the identifiers if they are being used.
Yes, and we included that, including the code set and version, indeed. So care team member ID should be optional. And then I think there were some comments about, you know, how do you make it optional? Do you say, you know, it needs to be none or a null value? And, you know, somebody mentioned that you need to have a date on the value. That, I think that's a level of detail that we are really not being asked to comment on, you know, at the implementation
right.
level. But yeah, I think these are key concepts.
Stephen, I had a suggestion.
Sorry. Yes.
Am I butting in? Sorry.
No. Katie was helping me keep track of the hands, but everyone's been chiming in, which works fine for now.
Okay. I worry that the word remove might create confusion at the HITECH meeting and would suggest that it may just, we just say merge to make clear that we're not getting rid of it, we're keeping it.
I like that. Yeah, I think, you know, at one point, Dan had suggested perhaps we should just remove it. But I think our discussion did move past that, and I think you're right. It's more about including the narrative. I would almost use the word include rather than merge. But again, if Al's going to make a few more adjustments, that I think one of those words would be better.
So, Stephen, I just wanted, since the changes have to be made immediately, basically, I just wanted to be clear on what the ask is here, because in the next bullet, clarify scope of lab rep values and results, which would specify to include narrative component, covers almost everything that's in the previous bullet, which is to remove the narrative element. I just wanted to be clear on that we're... No, we're not really merging laboratory and path report narrative into lab results. We're just almost expanding the definition, finding some more specificity on the definition of lab value and results.
So I think in a sense, Al, that the third bullet becomes redundant, and that we can, if we just had that fourth bullet there, we could then speak to, you know, kind of the process of our thinking and how we ended up where we did.
Okay.
Anything else? All right. And on the next slide, we talk about the remaining work that we will be doing, which is to say continuing to refine our Task 1A and B recommendations based on continuing input, both from task force members and the public, and then focusing on 1C, which I think is really going to be a meaty couple of meetings that we're going to have over the next 2 or 3 weeks, talking about, you know, which items from Level 2 should optimally be brought forward into Version 2, and why, and the prioritization of those, and the grouping or not. And then after we make our April presentation, we'll be moving on to tasks 2 and 3, discussing the expansion process, priorities, guiding principles, and then preparing for the next cycle of submissions and how they're going to be managed. So I think there's, you know, we'll talk about this. Leslie has prepared a slide just giving some thoughts about how we're thinking of approaching task 3, and we'll talk a bit about the prioritization that we've discussed and go from there. Michelle, your hand is up.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Under evaluating the expansion process, is that going to include almost a philosophic definition of what the USCDI is or a vision for that? Because I'm hoping that we really are pressing ONC or really the broader community to make a determination, is USCDI going to be an umbrella organization or for data elements, you know, kind of across the ecosystem here, or is the vision of this to be much more narrow? But I think it's a fundamental question that all of us have to understand. Thanks.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Michelle. And I think we've had a number of people raise this issue. And I think there are some key sub questions in there, which is to say, you know, if a data element is included in USTDI, must it always be made available in every certified system? I think the answer to that is yes. You know, must it be collected by every stakeholder to whom the USTDI applies? You know, I think we've settled on the idea that no, you know, that head circumference, pediatric head circumference may not apply if you're a hospice system, you know, that kind of thing. But I think this notion of the guiding principles and clarification, I mean, we can certainly, and I anticipate we will in our phase two work, come up with some suggestions and guiding principles, but I'm sure, you know, Al and Mike and the team will welcome that. But I certainly do agree with the sentiment that before the next cycle begins, that there is some publication that helps to put USCDI in a more understandable context for the community and the ecosystem.
Great, thanks.
Al, do you want to add to that? I was sort of channeling you there.
You're doing a pretty good job of it. I wanted to first just answer Michelle's question directly, and the answer is yes. ONC is working on just that. Exactly that thing in scope that you asked about and Stephen explained. More to follow, but we definitely, it's not just, you know, do we have all the rules set right and do we have all the criteria set right? It's bigger than that. So yes, expect to see that before the end, sometime during the version 3 submission cycle to give people enough time to respond to that and possibly change their approach to version 3 submissions.
Andy, you got your hand up.
I have. I've been patient for once. It's unusual for me. I was just going to ask whether Al et al. And ONC, would you value this group rather than simply saying we need to focus on core, would you actually value if we said, and this is how we think you should look at other stuff? Or should we just leave that and ONC is going to work that one through?
We asked the reason that we added, we're a little nonspecific in our tasks. Some of them were very specific, but others were not specific. And so we're looking for that sort of input as well, Andy, in kind of any form, whether it's high level philosophic, if you will, or low level tactical sorts of recommendations.
Okay, so we should, Steve, it sounds like we should come up with at least vaguely what we think that structure should look like for the specialist areas of data for interoperability.
Say more. What do you mean?
But it sounds like Al is actually opening the door and saying, hey, rather than just saying USCDI needs to focus, we could actually say USCDI needs to focus, and this is how you could handle other areas where you want to define data for interoperability. So
right.
Specific.
Okay.
I'm trying to say a little bit vague and talk about, you know, thematic areas as opposed to disease conditions or anything like that.
Sure.
I mean, or use cases.
But
yeah.
Ophthalmology would be a good one that's found its way into the proposals right now. Well, actually, that shouldn't, to my mind, probably shouldn't sit in USCDI, but it is an area that requires standardization.
And if you, Andy, or others, you know, wake up in the middle of the night with a flash of genius, you know, what I would suggest is that you capture that in the task force member recommendations spreadsheet, and then we can use that as a place to share those ideas and then bring them forward. I think people have been doing a good job.
Happy to, but you know full well that flashes of genius are highly unlikely to come from me, but okay.
All right, good. So let's, anything else on this? I see no more hands. All right, Al, if you can, I would love you to bring up the task force recommendations tracking spreadsheet. And what I've attempted to do, and I invite all of you to just pull that up yourself, if you've got a nice large second screen and you can just go through it. So I've tried to make good on our promise that comments put in on individual cells will be brought forward. So what I did was I went through and reviewed the comments that people have placed on that spreadsheet and brought them forward for specific task force discussion. A number of you have been working in some small task groups on some of these more thorny issues. So if you look, or if we can look on row 4 in the spreadsheet, which is an item originally submitted by Dan about assessment kind of treatment, as we were discussing just now. Hans, you had made the comment that US Corps and CDA have items in them that sort of fall under this umbrella, but furthermore, Mark and Dan went through and actually put together a specific recommendation, and since we don't yet have it up on the Adobe meeting, I will just read it, unless you want to, Mark, since you'll probably give it the right intonation.
Either way, so I'll just go for it.
Are you recommend sure that?
Sorry, Al, what was that?
Are you not seeing the spreadsheet?
We're not. We are seeing the PowerPoint. We are not seeing the spreadsheet.
Oh, wait. I don't know. Oh, I picked the wrong screen. My bad.
Huh? We understand. That's a beautiful shot of the Milky Way, I must say. Sorry, others can't see that. I saw Al's screen. Al's desktop was lovely. Here it comes. You have special powers when you're a co-chair. You can see what's going on, where the sausage is being made. Okay, so Mark, go ahead and take us through your recommendation on row 4.
Okay, this is from Dan and me. We recommend that one, ONC invite stakeholders and the public to submit proposals for US CDI version 3 that provide the range of terminology standards and code sets needed for this important data class. And two, ONC clarified that the data element includes both assessment and plan of treatment detail for exchange. So that was sort of our recommendation. The last sentence is explanatory for the committee, unless you think you wanted to add it. The second point reflects the fact that, let me back up. The reason we recommend this is because the regulation itself already defines the data element assessment and plan of treatment. So to change it would require an amendment to the regulation, so which we didn't think would be happening very quickly. So we pitched it as a recommendation about version 3, which is coming up in 6 months. The current regulation provides in the alternative that, if memory serves, it can be assessment and plan section or assessment section and plan of treatment section. And that second option is much more detailed, much more what we would normally think of. The first option in the regulation has very little. So hence the reason for our second part of our recommendation to clarify that the data element includes both assessment and plan of treatment detail.
Okay,
thanks,
so
Steve.
Thank you, Mark and Dan in absentia for your work on that. You know, I know, you know, when you come back with one sentence, it can sort of feel like, gee, why did that take us 5 hours to do? But really, really appreciate the thought you gave it. Anybody have any thoughts about this, positive or negative, with regard to whether we bring this back to the ONC or to USCD?
Hi,
I should say.
So this is Sasha. I strongly
Thanks, Sasha. I'm sorry. I know your hand was up. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I didn't know if I should just jump in. So I know that I strongly support getting clarification. I actually did a little research on this recently and polled both some coworkers and some Epic users on what they thought assessment and plan meant, given the one sentence definition on the USCDI website of what that data class is. And I think, you know, it's maybe to the concern that Dan raised originally that I did not get the same answer from anyone I asked, right? There's a huge variety in what different people thought that would refer to. So I think clarifying is important. I'm not sure that I totally understand part two of the clarification that Mark and Dan have suggested. Maybe you could walk me through that again. And I had, I guess, maybe a related question. As I polled people and I said, hey, what would you think, you know, with this definition about assessment and plan from the USCDI website? What do you think that is? A lot of things that people suggested were duplicative of other USCDI data classes. A lot of duplication, I think, as Dan even had pointed out, with progress notes, but even with other concepts like future appointments being potentially duplicative of encounters, patient instructions, results, things like that. And so I guess part of my question was maybe philosophically, are each of the data classes in USCDI intended to be unique, or would we expect overlap between, you know, progress notes and assessment and plan of treatment as separate data classes in that way? I know the CCDA standard that's previously been pointed to for assessment and plan and certification is actually a notes template, though FHIR points to the care plan, I think, which is, you know, also a little bit challenging as we think about what this really means.
Yeah, those are great comments, Sasha, and I think it underlines the fact that this just needs more work. This needs some TLC, and I think that the way that Dan and Mark posed it as a version three task is realistic. You know, this is not something that is going to get done in time for version two. This needs a lot of input and thought. So I like the way this is being proposed. Does anyone have any concerns about including this in our comments back to HITECH?
What are we proposing with version two in part two of this?
Stephen, would you like me to walk
Please.
Through and
yeah,
explain,
go
try
ahead,
to explain
Mark.
A little better?
Yeah.
Thanks for the question, Sasha. I worked off the definition, the regulation, which I think is a little more precise than what we find on the website for USCDI, and that may be a source of confusion or explanation. The regulatory definition of plan, and I'm doing this from memory, assessment and plan of treatment, says that it's either one thing or another, and from memory, it's either the assessment and plan section of CCDA 2.1, the standard is referenced in the regulation, or it's the assessment section and the separate plan of treatment section in CCDA 2.1. I've gone through, parsed out what each of those three named sections include, and the first one includes far, far less than the second alternative. The second alternative, so that's why we are, why in part two of the recommendation, we are recommending that ONC clarify that the data element actually includes all of that, and not just the small fraction that would be included in the first option in the regulatory definition. Does that help, Sasha?
I appreciate that. I want to dig in. When you say the regulatory definition, was this a definition in the information blocking regulation or in a prior reg?
It's in the prior reg in the defining 2015 edition of CERT, where it defines, there's a definition of the USCDI at that time.
Okay, gotcha. With the CCDA templates that it points to at that point.
Correct.
Okay,
correct. In the definition, it mentions the standard, which is listed separately, and that is the CCDA 2.1 template.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I think the only challenge I would have with your suggestion under two then is that the CCDA template pointed to by the 2015 edition is different from how HL7 has mapped US Core, the concept of assessment and plan, to the care plan resource. And we would want to make sure that both FHIR and CCDA were able to express this concept consistently, I think, for our goals to be achieved.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Hans, you have your hand up?
Yes, and I'd like to jump in on exactly that point that might then be helpful to clarify that the suggestion made is being made, that's great, to really use that starting with the intersection between US Core and CCDA and really build on that to clarify what the intent is, and then we can progress so that it also provides then the opportunity for the standards community to begin aligning that based on that, okay, what are we trying to achieve with these things and work on that. So that would enable that that either there's clarity why both need to support all, or that in certain contexts, a document versus a care plan, plan of care in fire, that there are some variances. But I think that second part of clarifying that would help a little bit more to really start with that intersection of what's there, because that's what people are currently implementing against.
So, Stephen, here's an idea. If you drop that last sentence in the recommendation, which was really explanatory from Dan and me, and just building up to ONC clarify that ONC clarified that the data element includes both assessment and plan of treatment data for exchange consistent with FHIR and CCDA standards, or something like that.
Consistent with, or is there another term?
There's probably a better word.
In alignment with?
I think we really want the overlap between the two, right? Where the two overlap,
yeah.
That's what we're aiming for.
And then we can progress.
Although
there,
that shouldn't be a limiting. If you think of it as a Venn diagram and you've got a bunch of stuff in the fire section, you would not want that excluded because it wasn't within the overlap.
There is one challenge there that currently the requirement is that the way it seems like that the data in USCDI at this point in time, and over time I think needs to change, is expressible in both CCDA and FHIR US Core. Now, I think from prior discussion, I think we're starting to see, and as we expand beyond the clinical data more into administrative and financial data, that expectation will not hold up. So I think in principle, I'm okay with you, Mark, as you're saying that, is that it need not be that either one of them supports everything, but that's certainly not the expectation today. So I think we need to figure out that transition in expectations so that we can look at that. So that's why perhaps is that the aiming for the intersection between the two and align with that as the starting point might be the right next step, and then we continue to build from there as we clarify which construct is really used for what.
Very helpful.
Because we're looking at something, a recommendation for version 3, couldn't we go beyond that so that we're inviting the community to perhaps take it beyond the intersection?
Is 2 supposed to refer to the recommendation in 1? Or is 2 referring to the current state? I guess I'm maybe just to make sure I understand, are we going to include assessment and plan in USCDI version 2 at all, or remove it pending the recommendation that we clarified in 3 with specific terminology standards and code sets?
Can we
are not recommending removal.
It already sits in the USCDI version 1, so it's already there.
Right. I guess, but I think then if it's already in version 1 and going to be in version 2, we can't have certifications proceeding imminently if only one of the certification standards supports the definition that we clarify to.
Again, unless we clarify. I don't think we're going to clarify it in version 2. I don't think we're proposing making a substantial change because there just isn't time. This is my understanding is that these are all suggestions for version 3.
Unless we clarify that there is acknowledgement that given this correct, yes. In this context, sorry, I was using a different definition for a moment. Yes, in this context, not a different data element.
Good. All right. Denise is agreeing. Any other thoughts here?
Something to consider is that until the next rulemaking cycle, health IT is going to be required to be able to capture and exchange diagnostic imaging narrative, lab report narrative, and path report narrative as a discrete data element. And so consider the impact of a recommendation or even an action to remove that data element from a requirement when it's going to be a requirement for at least the next several years. And so rather than removing them possibly to clarify the reason for the narrative, which was the same reason that we added clinical notes in the first place.
What you're saying is that while we could make these clarifications in version 2, that systems are still working with version 1. And until rulemaking transitions everyone to a future version that would include this clarification, systems will continue to need to deal with narratives as a discrete data element. Is that kind of what you said?
Yes. And so just consider the impact of removing something, and it basically makes conformance to V2 impossible or difficult when the requirement is still to conform to V1, which would include this data element that is removed in V2.
Is that accurate in light of and now only looking at those that actually use the standards to implement this, because in other settings that might not, in other initiatives that might not play, but looking at how the standards are implemented and how the terms, attribute, and data elements are used there, we may want to consider and think about whether that's truly that much of an impact based on where and how narrative is captured and therefore could or could not be available as part of a report or not. So I would suggest to have a look at that. So I'm not convinced that that it would make it impossible, but it's worth looking at.
Yeah. And I don't know that this is a point that we need to get hung up on here in the task force. I think we're sort of helping to suggest the future direction and the subtleties of how that's going to play itself out are important, and thank you for raising them, but I don't think we're going to solve them. All right. I don't see hands up. In the interest of time, I'd like to keep moving down to row 9. Where a number of people made the point, which we've touched on already, that under care team member ID, it's going to be important that we embrace the idea that not all care team members will have an ID. And again, we don't have to get into the technical details of how that's going to be done, but that will be included in our recommendations as we discussed. Anything else on that? Okay, we're looking forward to Andy's stroke of genius.
Can I just add something really quick, because it's a broad comment, not just on care team member ID. The US CDI defines the requirements for capabilities of a system, not the requirements to document anything in a system by a provider.
Right.
And that applies to every data element in US CDI. Practice guidelines dictate what must be documented. Various guidelines dictate what must be documented. This is what a system must be documenting.
And I think that will be a nice subpoint to include in that clarification of what is and isn't US CDI that we're looking forward to ONC producing. Okay, on row 11, in the discussion of encounter time, Mark added a further thought related to the potential benefit of studying what dates and times are already captured in health IT systems and could be used to indicate an encounter time. It's an interesting thought, and maybe EHRA could help us out with that. I don't know whether Sasha or Hans, you guys might want to take an action item to check in with folks, you know, to provide some input to ONC as they're thinking about how to further clarify encounter time. I'll steal a little bit of Michelle's thunder. The CMS has prepared some really detailed comments that they're going to be posting to the public website that also touch on this area. I think there's been a lot of good input on encounter time.
If we were to do a survey within EHRA, is there like a list of choices to survey about current capabilities on? I don't know if that's part of like, a lower level data class that we could kind of steal from for our survey.
I think that's a question to you, Al.
So I'm trying to, come up with a good answer. I think that, however, if the question or the recommendation is going to be, should include a particular sort of timing, and you can get that information from surveying users or surveying systems, that's fine. But I just wanted to clarify that we intentionally had a discussion about encounter timing, because I think the original submission was for encounter timing, but either way, that it was intentionally left open to allow for a variety of different types of timing to be included, because depending on the type of encounter, inpatient stay, outpatient, or anything in between, the time element could mean different things.
Is the intention to define the start of the encounter or the start and the end of the encounter so that you have the whole duration of time of it? Is that what you're trying to get at? We're trying to get at with this element?
ONC's original intent was to allow for the ability to capture appropriate timing related to an encounter.
I think that if you capture the start of the encounter, you can define an episode of care. If you want to automate the process of billing based on the length of time of the encounter, that's a much more challenging issue. And as I said, the duration of an episode of care is interesting. And I guess an encounter makes that easier to define what that is. Is that what we're trying to do?
And maybe as additional context, if the question is that in asking EHRA for feedback and thoughts on time, looking at the current standards that support this would indicate that where those kind of discussions effectively have been occurring is that the period that has a start and an end of an encounter must be able to be supported. And where, depending on the encounter, whether it's inpatient or outpatient, that one or both are relevant, although both may not be valued at the same time. And length is in the base standard certainly there, but is in the US core not a required supported capability at the moment. So the extent of a outreach would be is that how many are expressing encounters in terms of length, but that then goes back to the prior question, what are we trying to achieve with this for the purpose of USCDI version 2?
Michelle, you've got your hand up.
Hi, thanks, and thank you for having flagged this issue to begin with. I think from a CMS point of view, the ability to identify an encounter time frame, when did something begin and when did something end, and so I think that's what we're looking for. Certainly for quality measures, when we define quality measure, especially an electronic one, it sometimes is, when did it begin, when did it end? And it crosses different kinds of encounters, as you've all pointed out. It's hospital encounters, it's clinic encounters. And so it really is the beginning time, the end time, and then, of course, you can calculate the duration from that. If we can't define that because we don't have start and stop times, then it limits the ability to understand the care that was provided for any given process, encounter, take use encounter, and look.
So can we ask Sasha and Hans, since Hans has already turned in all of his old homework, to take this back to EHRA and start a discussion?
Yes, and the comments that Michelle just made around start and end for inpatient stays, clearly for outpatients, is the question there will be, is the end time always relevant?
Well, it's certainly relevant to billing, you know, in the current billing process. I know now when I code for encounters, my EHR is running a little timer in the background, and it tells me how long I'm, you know, in the encounter, and gives me the option of using that to select a code based on the new billing rules. So
which is typically the length. That's typically then the length. That's why I'm just curious. But we'll follow up.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. No more hands. So, and you can see, I hope, that in the column J there for the discussion, I've tried to throw in a few times that EHRA might consider in their survey. All right. On row 12, and again, I'm pushing this because we want to get to the other spreadsheet still, and the discussion of provider role. Dan and Grace have both weighed in here. Dan's not here. His point was the data class should add a clarifying statement about whether organizations are specifically excluded from being represented as a care team member. I think it was a good point. And then Grace, did you want to speak to your comment here?
Yes, so this is what I was previously mentioning. My concern from the patient and care partner perspective is that in cases where you have chronic illness, multiple comorbidities, rare disease, disability, a lot of the care is happening outside of the traditional four walls of medicine, and these essential care partners, advocates, people who are designated as personal representatives or executors of the estate, et cetera, will not have an identifier at this time, and I don't want that information to be excluded as a result.
Right. Any other comments on that?
Well, just to clarify, you're saying they should at least include their name if they don't have them, because I think that's reasonable. But is that what you're saying?
Yes. So, my concern is that they're going to be linked as the name and an identifier. And if the identifier isn't available, that the information is not going to be entered.
Well, I think, that's a very reasonable position, so I support it.
And also, I think this comment, Grace, really refers to the data class as opposed to the individual data element here, and this is just where I stuck it for convenience as I was bringing it forward, so I think that's pretty clear. All right, no hands. We're going to go on to row 15. Encounter disposition, where we've had a pretty lively discussion. We went back and forth about whether disposition should only apply to hospital encounters or also to ambulatory encounters. I sort of felt like we were coming around to embrace this idea that disposition was a hospital-specific concept, but Mark did some additional homework and had a countervailing opinion.
Are we on row 15, Stephen?
15, yes.
Okay. So my comment there, it was only in relation to the previous recommendation, which said the next version of U.S. Core will include disposition under hospitalization. And I was just observing that I think encounter disposition is broader than just hospitalization, and it doesn't satisfy the issue I was thinking to say it's going to be included under hospitalization because there's more.
Yeah, and I'll just say in my experience that, you know, we don't use the term disposition in the ambulatory context. I mean, we'll use follow-up, planning, or, you know, return to clinic or this. So it's not a term that we're used to using. I think the term is, you know, as U.S. Corps has identified, more related to hospital encounters. But what do other people think? I think, Michelle, this was in the CMS comments also, as I recall.
It was. Thank you. We also think that this is broader than hospitalization. A simple example is emergency room disposition. That's considered ambulatory, not hospitalization. And we know that the disposition there is important. In clinic, granted, most, not everybody. And if we start looking at a broad definition of this, when you have somebody, for example, in a skilled nursing facility, what's their disposition? Are they going home? Are they going home with home care? Are they going back to the hospital? So we think this does extend beyond just the hospital.
Yeah, hear, hear.
All right, good. I think the comment to HITECH really is to provide greater clarification. there's a lot of detail here, and thank goodness Al's been here for all of our conversation, because he will help carry this forward. All right, and then finally, on this spreadsheet on row 16, in encounter location, Mark, you had a comment on this one also.
Yes, I think for context, this is more on the clarification side of thing. It's not a specific recommendation, but we see increasingly broad care occurs in non-clinical settings, remote care, virtual monitoring, et cetera. So we need to make sure that the value sets for location are not just limited to clinical settings and exclude those other places where encounters are occurring.
Great. And again, we're not seeing that. Al, if you can scroll down one more row, that'll display. But we did capture that. So thank you. All right. If no one has anything more to add here, I see no hands up. Oh, Al, you can't see the chat. I'm sorry. Okay, there we go. So we captured Mark's comment on row 16. Let's flip over, Al, to the other spreadsheet, if you will. The task force member recommendation spreadsheet. And again, we are at 8:30. We have 25 minutes before public comment. My goal is to go to the 1A and B recommendations that people have included, knowing that we will come back to 1C. So on the second spreadsheet, we start with a 1B on row 25. Grace, you...
I filtered it.
You filtered it. I'm sorry. My bad. Okay, you filtered it. Okay, so that's your bad.
Not the same if the first one that you wanted to talk about may not be.
No, that's fine. That's fine. The row numbers change. Okay, on the new filter, we'll go to row 7 with a 1A. And these classifications by task force charge are a little arbitrary. I actually went in and changed some of them because I think some people may have misclassified them, so I'll take responsibility for that. But this is, again, assessment and plan of treatment. As we've been discussing, Grace, a number of your comments have to do with social determinants of health and how to bring that forward. So maybe you want to take a couple of minutes, Grace, and perhaps Mark, because I know you're both really involved in gravity, to sort of set the table for this so that we don't necessarily have to go through every single item. I think where most of us are aware that the gravity project submission of new data elements to support social determinants mostly ended up at the comment level. And I think a lot of people were disappointed by that. But why don't you guys sort of give a high level of what you're thinking here?
Sure. Just really quickly, my biggest concern from the patient and care partner perspective is a lot of the data that we are recommending or already is captured in draft V2 is that missing that critical component of what patients are really dealing with in the real world. And that by not capturing essential social determinant of health factors that are huge barriers to patients, we're not going to be able to proactively connect them to the community support and the financial assistance resources as readily because that information is not reflected here. As a newcomer, I think I would defer to Mark and the work that he's been leading, but in general, somehow creating a framework here to ensure prioritization of social determinants of health to level one or level two.
And just to be clear, before you speak, Mark, you know, I think this notion of supporting a framework that will allow us to bring social determinants data elements forward into a future version of USCDI is a good way to phrase this. Because again, remembering that our task force's scope does not include moving things from comment into another field. But I don't want to deny us the chance to have this discussion. But again, I'm hoping to kind of abbreviate it a little bit here today so that we end up with those elements that we can meaningfully discuss under tasks 1A and B. Mark?
Thanks, Stephen. So I will help in that regard by pointing out that the discussion is coming. The Gravity Project did make a recommendation for social determinants of health with two categorizations, and one of those categorizations is at L2. So we will be able to discuss that at the appropriate time. It did not get included in draft B2, and I'll have more, and perhaps Grace will have more to say at that time. I agree. We've got to be considering how to incorporate social determinants of health, and I believe the Gravity Project is building a really good way forward using FHIR V4.
That's great. All right. So back to the spreadsheet then. So row seven has to do with how social determinants may eventually impact assessment plan of care. Row eight is a different thing. It's specifically about operative notes and the fact that particular note type was not included in the core set that was included in USCDI version 1. In draft version 2, there was no comment about increasing the number of note types. In fact, some of the note types got shifted off into other data classes. But we've heard this from both Leslie and Grace. I guess the question for the task force is, does anybody feel that we should, or anyone else besides Leslie and Grace, feel that we should or should not suggest to HITACH that they suggest to ONC that we pull operative notes into the clinical notes to be included in USCDI version 2.
This is Mark. I support the recommendation.
So I'm not clear. Were you saying we should include them or not include them? I thought they had been in there.
They are not. The USCDI version 1 includes procedure notes, but not operative notes.
Is that a difference?
They're different line codes. They're different things. I know our organization went through a whole deep dive on this. We actually decided to include operative notes in our releases for information blocking, but other organizations have not. There are issues around risk and surgeons and malpractice. A lot of surgeons probably would rather their operative notes not be read by their patients, perhaps, but some might. This is a specific recommendation to add operative notes and the associated line code to the list of note types that are shared under USCDI.
Okay, but I would suggest we at least put in surgical notes as a synonym or a hint, so that's what you're talking about.
Okay. But you support it, sounds like, Clem.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak one way or the other? If it's just more support, that's fine. Anybody feel differently? Anybody feel it's a bad idea?
This is Holmes. Just a question clarifying. The term operative note is used at the document level and it's used at the individual note level. Which one are we talking about here? The full document? As an operative note, or the operative note as the narrative, similar kind of conversation perhaps as some of the other notes, documents, narrative discussions.
So perhaps
what do you think we should report? Well, I think we'll need to reference the LOINC definitions, right? Do you have a feeling one way or the other, Hans? Do you have a preference?
I have a feeling, not yet a preference, but the feeling is that if it's about operative notes narrative, that it's more likely already in a number of different documents in play. If it's operative report, if you will, just to use that term to distinguish the two, that the question is that how wide is that? Because that's a document type that is currently not one of the ones that CCDA document types in the list of regulatory references and where it's included. So that's where I have a feeling, and that requires a little bit follow-up depending on what the intent is.
This was brought forward by people representing patients and caregivers. So I think the intent is to get the operative report, you know, as dictated or otherwise documented by the operating surgeon in the hands of the patient. That sounds to me like we're talking about the narrative. And it sounds like the issue of note types and where that narrative is included is probably not key to the intended use case.
All right. Steve, could I make a comment?
Yeah.
I just wanted to point out the fact that operative note was not submitted for version 2.
Ah, that's right. I think we heard that earlier. I'm sorry. Good point. We can't do this anyway. It's out of scope. Thank you.
Sorry.
We'll work on that next time. All right,
however,
moving on.
we're recommendations for version 3.
Right.
Well, just one more clarification. Procedure in FHIR is defined as something invasive. But I guess it could be just those little things you at the bedside. So I think it might be inclusive of surgical notes in some people's minds.
Yeah, and those people would be confused.
Okay.
Because LOINC differentiates them. So,
LOINC's got to be right, right?
Well, I mean, it's what ONC is pointing to. So,
okay.
So the fact that this was not yet suggested was not suggested prior to the version 2 deadline, takes this off the table. So sorry about that, Grace. And let's move on and cover as much of these as we can. Grace, the next one was immunizations.
Steven, can I just throw out a point on the previous one, please?
No. Sure.
Which is to Hans's point that the narrative might already be included in other places. So I think it's worth checking to see if it is in some way already included under a different name in the current USCDI or what's been submitted for L2 or draft V2, because then it might not be off the table. I don't know the answer. I'm just flagging the question.
The place that I'm checking is the CCD definition. If it is anywhere, that's where I suspect it is. But I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Grace, were you going to say something?
Well, then the same thing about immunizations. I think that wasn't originally submitted, but I was reacting more to the COVID-19 pandemic and how we couldn't have foreseen that needing to be submitted. So I just want to be mindful of time for line 9.
Okay. It's a good point. Yeah, I think there are a few of these that we'll have similar. The next one, Cheryl, your name is on this, along with Mark, on row 10, related to consent. Include social determinants of health data class, provide support for various use cases. Here again, I think, Mark, can you just clarify which of the gravity project proposal data elements was included in level 2?
So I'm first of all, I'm not sure if this should be a 1A or a 1C. I contemplated correctly.
Well, I think, it's probably a 1C in the end, right?
Yes. That was my guess, but I didn't want to correct, didn't want to change anything that Cheryl had indicated. To your question, we both submitted data, social determinants of health by subject area, like food insecurity, housing instability, and we submitted it organized by activity, like assessment, goal, health concern. That latter organization of the same subject data elements was included as L2, but was not included in draft V2.
I'm sorry, what was that again? Which one, Mark?
The version that organizes it by activity, like assessment, health concern, problem, intervention, goal, that was included. That data class, social determinant of health data class, was not included. That was listed as an L2, level 2.
Okay, great.
Correct.
The consent data element actually was determined a comment level because of a couple different reasons. But that was one of the six data elements that were submitted as the part 2 submission from Gravity. And that consent is actually comment level data element this time around.
Therefore, this becomes a task 3 item, not a 1A item. So again, I apologize for that. Moving right along, goals on row 11, again, related to SDOH data class. I think this is similarly gonna be now part of task 3, correct?
I'm guessing this is 1C, Stephen.
1C, because it is...
L2,
well,
level 2.
Okay, because this one is in level 2. Okay, got it. All right. Good. Got to get my colors right. And then on row 12, we had laboratory units of measure. Here again, I think this is just one that was not submitted. Isn't that right, Al? I know a number of people have pointed this out, or do we consider this to be included under laboratory results already? I know Clem has commented on this.
Sorry, yeah, units of measure is a standard, not meaning you. That's the way to express a laboratory result or other things as well, but it's can be titles as well, but the units of measure was basically incorporated, really considered part of the results, laboratory results section, but it was not specified as a applicable standard because within representing lab results or values with Loinc, SNOMED, and UCOM are all appropriate depending on the setting. And so the units of measure was not added to separate data. I feel like it's more of a applicable standard within very...
The problem, though, is that nowhere is it asserted now, although it was in an earlier version, that UCOM is what you'd use for units of measure when it was a quantity. Except you do assert it for vital signs. And, of course, it's also asserted in both CDA and FHIR and DICOM and IEEE.
I would just add, if we can add that to page 9, just to clarify where values and results is described, to make a note of that so it's crystal clear.
I'm sorry, you said page 9?
Oh, I'm looking at the draft.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. I think this sounds like something that we could and should bring forward in our comments to HITECH. Is that correct?
Yes. At least my perspective. It's hard
anybody
to work with you.
I mean, I can touch on it in our comments tomorrow, and then we can refine it before our April submission. All right, great. Moving on, so that was what had been sorted initially as 1As. The 1Bs, Grace, you're on a roll here. Date of resolution, you want to comment on that briefly?
This was one thing that really jumped out as a grave concern from a documentation standpoint. So, first of all, the date of resolution is not broadly applicable, in my comments, to people living with chronic illness, life-altering, life-limiting conditions, disability, rare disease, terminal illness, and even active death and end-of-life care. So if, God forbid, there should be some type of data element that has a vagueness in documentation, such as date of resolution, and then it's incorrectly documented, it can have severe, negative, irreversible, potentially, impact to patients and their families on matters such as disability benefits. And as you may or may not know, to overturn that type of a decision is an extremely heavy lift. So I really encourage the task force to consider highly removing this element at this time.
Go ahead. Well, I'd support that because it's a difficult thing. It's not maintained well, the records. And you've got different practitioners seeing different things, so they don't want to touch the other guy's problems. So you end up with a whole lot of stuff that might be resolved, but it's still hanging in there. So it's a tough problem. Not to mention the problem of the harm it might do.
So again, I don't mean to be defensive at all, but as the submitter of this element, I see it a little bit differently. And we had a nice opportunity to talk to HL7 about this just yesterday. Thank you, Dee Dee, and others for facilitating that. Again, I think the idea of these date fields associated with problems is really simply to make them available, not to require their population, but to have certified systems make them available. Date of resolution, unlike date of onset and date of diagnosis, was not specifically driven by the use case that led to this submission. Al, I think this was actually your suggestion to add this in to make a complete set for this data class. I appreciate the challenge. I mean, again, as a provider that would populate this field, I mean, I get it, and I would do it, but a lot of people tell me that my documentation is a little different than the average physician. So, Al, you want to give some perspective on why you thought this should be added?
I think that the reason that I recommended adding it is to create sort of a match set as far as date of resolution, date of onset, date of resolution. I think is a match set. Clearly, sometimes it's difficult to determine either one onset or resolution. But it helps a lot with problem list management. And Grace, to your point, that if people feel like there's some pressure to put something in date of resolution that takes them out of that providers are no longer considering management of a problem that has a date of resolution on it already entered. That's a valid point. But Stephen's point about not being required and possibly the assumption that an empty field for date of resolution is equivalent to current. Not true all the time, I know, but there's that's a possible way to indicate active problem.
Denise?
Yes, thank you. Grace, I really appreciate the concerns you expressed, but I want to share the flip side of that, which was referenced. If the problem list doesn't have some indication of data resolution, it can also impact, I'll take, for example, myself. I'm a commercial pilot, and I do have to provide some records periodically to the FAA. And it causes me great problems getting my medical certificate when there is no indication that something on my problem list was resolved, it was addressed, and then they end up penalizing and requiring you to have additional doctor's visits and provide more medical records. So it's been a huge problem. And then the safety side of it, too. I've seen things on a problem list that aren't even accurate or were suspected, and it appears as a problem, and there's no data resolution or that it was addressed. So I just want to give that other perspective.
Jim.
Yeah, hey, Jim Gergis here. In listening to all this, one thing I would offer is my initial thoughts were, hey, it's not required. So I get it that if we provided the ability, then for certain use cases, it's present to allow machine understandable termination, right? My only concern is the likelihood of it actually being correct, right? And the reason I would vote to not have it in there is because I don't know if we have enough data that when people do use the field, do we end up more often than not with data that's not correct or has to be validated, Denise, anyway, by going into the records? Because these are tricky issues, and from my perch, that introduces noise that, in my opinion, is more likely to be inaccurate than it is to be valuable. And there are other ways to solve the problem, like, would that be sufficient, a data field that said it resolved for getting a flight back, or are they going to require something more than that? So my vote would be it's unlikely to be useful when populated, and in fact maybe misleading. So I'd vote to
Mark?
Remove.
Yes. So just an observation that date of resolution is really tied to the definition of the problem. In my experience, problems are broadly defined, so a date of resolution, I think, would tend to suggest that all of that broadly defined problem is solved, where listening to Grace's description of issues, perhaps only a piece of it is. And so I'm just noting how important it is to connect the date of resolution to the granularity of the defined problem.
All right. This has been really helpful. I don't think we're going to make a decision. We are about to go to public comments. I will do my best to capture what we've been able to get through of this spreadsheet today, and we will come back to this and carry on at our next meeting. Let's go to public comment.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. Operator, can we please open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments.
And Grace, we see your hand up. You'll be the first voice when we finish public comments.
There are no comments at this time.
Thank you so much. And again, I'll just take a moment to, so maybe not the first voice. I'll take a moment again to encourage members of the public who are joining us to not be shy. We really look forward to comments from the public. Please think about offering them in future meetings. Grace?
If I may, I wanted to just have an additional follow-up comment on the discussion on the resolution, and then I can certainly appreciate both sides of the coin and how important it is in many circumstances to have that endpoint proving that there is resolution and health reinstated. I want to point out in those cases, while it is an additional step, there are other points, classes and elements and pieces of data that can be generated to prove resolution. On the opposite side, which is from my perspective the most challenging, if there is vagueness or an incorrect documentation in that field, it would require patients to go through the addendum process, which is very vague, it is not robust, and it is very challenging to have anything that's incorrect overturned as an acceptable or recognized addendum. So I just want the task force to also be mindful of that process, that it's a barrier in more circumstances than one.
Thank you. I will note, you know, and I think we may be moving toward the consensus to remove this, that there was another problem associated date included in B2 that was not put, or level 2, that was not proposed for draft B2, which was the date of onset. And I personally feel that having date of diagnosis without date of onset creates confusion, which we've heard here in our discussions and which we also heard at the HL7 meeting yesterday. So I think especially if we were going to suggest holding off on date of resolution, that we at least consider including date of onset along with date of diagnosis, because I think that makes it much clearer to users. You know, it's an easier story to tell. If you only have one of those, then people are likely to use it, more likely to use it incorrectly, I would posit. All right. Any comments on what I just said? Just feedback on that? No. All right. The next one on row 14, we'll just keep blasting away for one more minute here, was clinical notes, narrative section for patent diagnosis reports. Grace, was there something different here than what we've talked about before?
No, I think this has been rectified and addressed.
Okay. Do you mind if I just delete the row altogether?
That's fine.
Okay, good. All right. And that brings us just about to the hour. Let me see. Hans, you have the next one. You actually put a lot of thought into this about encounter diagnosis. I would invite people to go back to the editable spreadsheet, to what's now row 14, an item that Hans included, talking about encounter diagnosis. I think that's a lot like encounter time. There's a lot of potential devil in those details, and we will pick up our discussion there when we meet again. I think this brings us to the end of our 90 minutes together. Does anyone have any closing comments, questions?
Yeah, I'd like to comment, you and Grace, on getting through these agendas. This hasn't always happened, you know, in the history of all the high-tech meetings. So you guys need, you know, get some gold stars for all this.
Thank you. Ma'am, your comments are most appreciated.
Stephen, can I just voice appreciation for what you're about to undertake tomorrow, which is to carry forward all of this detail in such a succinct way that all of the HITECH members easily understand it. So thank you so much.
From your mouth to God's ears. I got to tell you, the HITECH is a great place. I mean, really good people, very thoughtful, very friendly, and we're hoping to get some guidance from Mickey. And yeah, I look forward to representing all of you there.
Hey, Mark,
we will
don't
see
put
you
pressure
next
on him.
Week. Bye, guy, y'all.
Okay.